Welcome to the download here on WGN and WGNradio.com. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, let's take you back one year, October 2017. The Harvey Weinstein scandal rocked Hollywood, and women from all walks of life went public about their experiences with sexual harassment and men abusing their power. One area specifically was politics in the state of Illinois. An open letter was penned from women who had worked in Springfield, pointing out the pervasive misogynistic culture that had plagued our state capital and government for years. Over 140 women signed the letter, and it began a year-long process that featured task force recommendations and forced House Speaker Michael Madigan to vow to create a safer workplace. The Open Letter Project was partly helmed by my guest today, Becky Carroll. Becky's a longtime strategist and government spokesperson. She runs her own company called C Strategies. She's worked on campaigns for presidents, Gore and Obama, mayors, Daley and Emanuel, the latter running communications for his office and for CPS. Today we talk women in Illinois politics and the art of the spokesperson. Becky Carroll, welcome to the download.
Thanks. I'm so
excited to
have
you.
I've had so many of my peeps on your show, but this is now my turn. I'm honored.
And this is, I love this stuff. I could talk all day about inside politics. We've already been before the mic's running. Yeah, right. But let's talk about this project. It was a year ago, which is hard to believe it's been a year, and also the fact that it's only been a year. There had been a lot of news, let me put it that way, have come out since the letter. Do you feel that that open letter, has improved the quality of life for women in state government?
I have to say, I think in general throughout politics, yes, with limitations. I think for the first time, everyone's talking about it, acknowledging it. There's now expectations that behavior is supposed to change. It hasn't entirely changed. It's getting there. There are laws being put on the books. There are more laws in the works. The Anti-Harassment Equality and Access Panel put out a report that's a blueprint to help campaigns to really change that culture and behavior. So those are all positives, but the real work that needs to be done is actually having more women at the table impacting policy, which will change culture.
There's two parts to this, and we're going to get to both. I mean, there's the campaign part, and then there's the actual government part. And we've seen, because a lot of the recommendations were about both, but let's start with the campaign stuff, because campaigns used to be the wild, wild west, and you've worked on many of them where it almost glorified that way. I mean, any of the movies or the West Wing or anything about campaigns is that it is pulling up the bootstraps and we work together and there's no rules and we just got to get this done. And there is just without the rules, there's just rampant sexual harassment and misogynistic culture How do you get past that? Because, again, like I said, it feels like it's just the wild, wild west.
Yeah, I mean, like, campaigns are a very unique animal. I mean, you're working in very intense, crisis-driven situations. You're working 18-hour days, 7 days a week, and your personal becomes your professional and vice versa. And you bond with these people in ways that you never would. And these are people that maybe in your normal day of life, you'd never really be friends with them, but you do, and you create that bond. And it does create certain situations that can become very uncomfortable, but also where you look the other way. Because, you know, you're like, oh, well, that person just had too much to drink last night.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've been through that so many times. Most women have. And guys have, too. So, but now it's different. It's because people are not accepting the same behaviors. And I think it will still take time. But campaigns, by that nature, they're never going to change.
And there's a power structure there. Because
Absolutely.
A lot of people are working for volunteer. They're hoping that a win means that they're going to get a job.
Yeah. Everyone said, my first job was the Dawn Clark Netsch campaign in 94. I was an intern. When she ran in the primary, she won. I got a job. And I worked my tail off. And that's what you do. Campaigns are not for folks who think it's 9 to 5 or where you're going to be sleep deprived, because you are. But that's part of everyone does that. That's what you have to do to prove yourself on the campaign trail.
But because of that power structure, you have a lot of, and particularly a lot of those positions and have been positions filled by men who may be the campaign director or might be have the actual titles. Yeah. And that there seems to be that right there has to be, is that where we should look to how we can solve some of these issues on campaigns because of the obvious power dynamic?
No doubt. And we're seeing those changes, like with J.B. Pritzker's campaign. Ann Caprera is running it. She has an incredibly diverse staff, African-Americans, women. And you see that elsewhere, too. But that's a new trend. I've never been on a campaign where a woman was the campaign manager. So I'm happy to see that. There's lots of women who have been in my roles as communications director, which has traditionally often been a role held by women. And it's often a pretty often powerful position to have on a campaign. But when you're in situations where the campaign manager is a guy, they hire a lot of their male friends, you don't feel comfortable coming forward and you just suck it up. And I've had many conversations with women over the years, like, that guy's a problem. If he does something with you, you come to me, or just, you know, ignore it. He's just a jerk, whatever. I mean, we've all had these conversations, but that's not acceptable.
And you've seen it. Yeah. And you've seen it play out in real time. I mean, we saw it with Tony Preckwinkle not too long ago and one instance. And we're also seeing it from the other side. When you talk about the J.B. Pritzker case and the lawsuit, that the expectation has changed from the people who are volunteering. There is less of a deal with it, or kind of environment, or that there might have been when you were running Don Clark Netsch, right?
I mean, like, I certainly was not, you know, staying at fancy hotels, and I was traveling. I was sleeping on people's floors, on their couches, crappy hotels, you name it. But that's, again, like, part of the experience that you kind of pride yourself on.
Right.
Maybe it's a generational thing. Folks have different expectations, but I still think campaigns are campaigns, and it's where you get your feet dirty and you elbow your way through the job, but you got to prove yourself no matter how much money your campaign has or doesn't. You still have to do the work.
Are you surprised? I guess probably not surprised, not the right word, because you've been in politics a long time, your whole life, that the issue has been politicized. In Illinois specifically, Mike Madigan and his office became a political rallying point. You're seeing the Republicans who are running in both the primaries and the general look at the Democrats and be able to call out sexual harassment because they're in charge. Are you, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but what does that mean when it comes to trying to get to the bottom of these issues in government?
Yeah, it's actually been, it's bothered me and I think a lot of other the women who I've worked with in signing this letter and I've worked with in this business, because it's kind of using our issue as a crutch, you know, to become a mailer or, a negative TV ad instead of like having a very thoughtful discussion around the issue. Because it's not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. It's no matter what party, it's an issue. No matter what industry, it's an issue. So to use it for a political get, is kind of insulting, but it's politics, and it's not surprising at all. So there you go.
There you go. That's the answer. Women in leadership. Susana Mendoza was on the record as part of this even a year ago, talking about that it's beyond sexual harassment. It's a misogynistic culture that the rules were written by men in the heyday of politics. You know, you can go back centuries, but this idea that it's not just about, you know, how men treat women in the workplace, but it's about the rules in which state government works. How do you change that? What's the recipe? What's the formula for changing that culture?
Sure. Well, I think we have to recognize that there are certain things that women do that men can't. We can have children, and we should be supported for that. And instead of being ostracized because of that, as someone with two kids, I'm lucky. I haven't had that issue because I work for me. But there are women, and there are studies that show that women literally lose hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of their career if they choose to have children. They get passed up for career opportunities. They get passed up for promotions and whatnot. So I think whether it's government or other industries, there has to be a very intentional effort to recognize that we have to make some space for women to, you know, be a mom if they want and not be punished for it.
And is the best way to do that is to elect women.
I think elect women.
Right.
Elect women, but also, and listen, in government, more women who are chiefs of staff, more women who are heading agencies, more women who are policymakers, that's really intentional or important, because they're the ones at the table actually doing the work.
Right.
And it's great. I would love to have, instead of 36% of women in the state legislature, to have 50%. And I think that should be an attainable goal if both parties actually put money behind it and put a plan behind it. But you have to have them at the staff level. You have to have them in government. You have to have them at the campaign level. And then you also need it in the elected offices.
For the first time, we saw it in 2016 with gender playing a role in politics and electing the first female president. And that was something that there had been so much. There's been so much analysis after the fact of what was at play in that election, and did people were people not ready for or voted against the idea of a women president, this specific woman. There's so much that goes in; it's not even worth going. Yeah. But there is something to be said. You know, is that that movement, as we see, as more and more people take to the streets to protest on any given event that we might see, and the numbers grow and the numbers grow. Are we at the point in this country, which is still, again, surprising and head-scratching that we haven't been there before, but that, that we are ready to elect at the presidential level, at the biggest levels of government, women?
I would like to think yes. I'm not 100% sure that we are there. And I think that's
why.
Just
why? Are you is there a
bias.
Push against it?
I just think there's some... there's a bias that people aren't willing to recognize. Just like I think there's a bias that people aren't willing to recognize that they hold biases against people of color, hold biases against women, people of different socioeconomic, you know, status. So this is something, this is why we have to have these open conversations so people can actually recognize that bias that's dug very deeply in them. Because most people are like, I'm not a racist. I'm not a sexist. I'm, you know,
yeah, right.
I like to lift up everyone. But when you really dig, you don't even realize the biases that you bring to the table. And that's often with hiring, which is where we see that because the data proves that's to be the case, whether it's with pay or it's with women in leadership positions. So I think we are getting there, no doubt. I would like to be hopeful that we might see a woman president in 2020, but there's a lot of tough conversations that people have to have with themselves and look in the mirror and recognize what they're
contributing. You've a long time been a part of the Democratic Party. As somebody who has worked on campaigns, both Gore and Obama, and also held positions in Emanuel's administration here in Chicago, is it imperative that the candidate is a woman? I mean, after what happened in 2016, is there a push on the Democratic side to say, I know there's a lot of men that want this position, but the next nominee will be a woman?
Yes. I think it's the right time. And I would also like to see a woman of color. I think, especially in the city, given, you know, that the mayor is not seeking a third term, and we have a lot of very interesting and people with different experiences they're bringing to the table. I think all of their voices matter in this discussion, but I'm very happy to see that there are so many women who are raising their hands or might be raising their hands. And I think the city is ready for that. And I think, frankly, the city needs it.
Well, just think about it. I mean, right off the bat, Toni Preckwinkle, Lori Lightfoot, and Amara Enya. All three of them are capable and are making headlines. It's an interesting. Yeah. It'd be awesome to see.
Maybe Susana Mendoza, maybe some others. So I would like to see as many women at the table and going for it.
All right, let's talk about being a spokesperson. What a crazy job. I think that there has been, as someone in the media and we've worked together, I understand the role of communications director and spokesperson. For the first time, I think the American people are getting more and more headlines about that job, thanks to the White House and the press secretary there, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Mm-hmm. And it brings up this notion, and I think, I'm an inside politics guy. If you don't like it, you can shut it off. I don't care. But the notion is a spokesperson, a communications director, is it for the people or is it for the candidate or elected official?
I think... for your own personal and professional integrity, you have to find a balance. And frankly, if the spokesperson is the story, then that's the problem. And that person should step away because it should be about the issue, the debate, whatever that is that spokesperson is delivering on behalf of their administration or whatever entity it is that they're working for. Mm-hmm. But I've been a spokesperson on housing and planning and development and budget and schools and whatnot. And you have to be super knowledgeable because you have to hold yourself to a high standard because the media will. And you're also there to help inform them and answer their questions.
Right.
But when you're going on the record, you have to be thinking like unlike maybe Huckabee Sanders, I would never attack someone. I just think that's kind of unconscionable. You really have to think about your audience and representing a government entity. You have to remember that, you know, the taxpayers are paying for your salary, but you do have a boss, whoever that might be. But you have to make sure that the message you're delivering is honest, and truthful and factual, and that's your job.
And your job as well is, and I think that's where there's always friction with the media, is access or no access.
Right.
If I want to talk to the mayor, I got to go through you, and you say no.
Right. And I'm often someone that says yes. I believe if you want to hold that seat, you should be willing to be on the record as much as possible. There will be times when it does call for your spokesperson, and I could cite a million of them, but there's a balance. Mostly the spokesperson should be there to help inform and educate the reporter on the facts. I don't like to have to be on the record
right.
all the time. It's only really when you need to, and there are just going to be instances when your principal, whoever that is, just isn't going to be the right person because they also have a job to do.
I always think about something changed, and obviously we're seeing it on the White House stage right now, but even in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the spokespeople for Mayor Daley ever being in a story. And they'll get quoted. They'll be on the record. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying, but something changed where columns were written about Mayor Emanuel's team at the beginning. I remember Tara Cooper and company. There was Mark Brown from the Sun-Times, or maybe Crane Gregg, getting mm-hmm. almost taking out their frustrations with their relationship with the person who's the spokesperson and making it a public story.
Yeah.
Is that how do you view that? I mean, because you were in that spot. You worked at CPS when there was a strike, when there were closing historic.
I've had my fair share of battles
right.
with media.
So and I'm sure been the subject of
yep.
of different stories. So as a spokesperson, how do you feel about the media almost turning the lens and making it about that relationship as opposed to your boss?
Yeah. I think it's a little unfair, but I think if you're gonna take the job, you have to expect it. I mean, I've been the subject of attacks and I just take it because that's the job that I signed up for. I think, though, media, they rely on us. We rely on them. There's definitely that synergy. And we just have to, at the end of every story, respect one another and then the next day move on. You can't hold grudges. I'm not going to get every story I want and
right.
not every reporter is going to get what they want. And I think most reporters who are good at what they do recognize that. And I think most folks who do it, my job. It's the same thing.
When you were working, and this is the fun part, did you play favorites? Were you like, I like this reporter. I'm going to give this person.
I guess
person.
It depends on the beat. no, listen, I mean, I've been doing this now for 24 years
yeah.
or so. And there are some, especially political reporters, because I've done so many campaigns. I mean, I still talk to many of them. Some of them have decided to become, you know, my media mom and always like tell me like, don't forget to have kids and don't forget to marry and all that stuff, you know. So, but you become, you know,
yeah.
you develop relationships with these
right.
people. But you always still have to have some semblance of a wall because, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to get that call one day
yeah.
and you're not going to like it. And, but there's still a place to have respect and have a good mutual beneficial relationship. But there are also others who aren't really interested in that. And, you know, I never like to say I play favorites. It's
right.
more like, where can I go where I know someone will be fair?
Okay.
That's all that I ask for is fair.
There's been a lot made about transparency in government. And this is something that was a big part of the Emanuel administration with the mm-hmm. FOIAs. And you can now go and we see it even playing out today in the campaign where whether it's emails mm-hmm. about Legionnaires' disease or finding out leaked documents about Toiletgate or whatever
right.
it might be. But there has been this thought that technology would make government and political campaigns more transparent. Has it?
I do think the advent of social media has forced campaigns and government entities to be more transparent. There's nothing that you can hide anymore. You can't even hide who you're going out to lunch with. You know, like you can't hide where you're going on vacation. You just have to accept that if you put something in paper, you have a conversation, you put something in an email, somehow it will get out there. And I'm okay with that because I think it helps hold people to a higher mm-hmm. standard, and we should be held to a higher standard. I do think, though, at the same time, there are some conversations that you need to have to make the sausage that are difficult, and you have to let people have those conversations.
Right.
But the end product, I mean, there has to be full transparency.
Are you seeing, you know, and I ask you this as a strategist, not in your personal experience, but Are you seeing politicians get wise to that, knowing that if they put something on paper or they use a certain email and, you know, and or a different one, or are they essentially, it's like The Wire, just burner phone after burner phone? Are you seeing politicians change the way they communicate or talk about sensitive issues because they know that they can be tracked?
Yeah, I think people are having a lot more one-on-one conversations and maybe phone conversations. I don't think that there's as much being transmitted as there used to be on email, or people are being very deliberate about what they're putting on email because they know it can't be FOIA'd, right? I mean, if that's what that was me, that's what I would be doing. So, yes, I mean, and you have to. I mean, there's no room for mistakes in this business. I mean, yeah, you're allowed to make a couple, but when it comes to, you know, you don't want to be caught.
Right.
And you know, if you're doing something wrong, you should be caught. But if you're doing the right thing, then be transparent about
right.
it. That's all there is to it.
When I think about you, have the experience of working both on political campaigns for president at the federal level. I mean, that's mm-hmm. running around the country yeah. and the stuff that they made famous in the war room or whatever it might be. But you also have experience of working in Chicago and working for mayors and specifically mm-hmm. Mayor Emanuel. Is it tougher to be in Chicago politics than the country?
It's funny. I have this conversation with a lot of my friends in this business because I always decide to stay in Chicago. I mean, I had a chance to go to Iowa, New Hampshire, and I went to Iowa for a little bit for Gore, but like I've never been hopping around the country doing campaigns because I love Chicago. I feel like I want to make an impact, and that mm-hmm. was my choice. So I have a lot of friends who did that, and then they came back here, and no doubt, Chicago is the toughest place to do this kind of work. But if you can cut your teeth here and do well, you'll do well anywhere.
What makes it tough?
Yeah. But someone like Rahm Emanuel is a great example.
But what makes it tough? Is it the media? Is it the power players? Is it the machine? Everybody wants something. What makes it tough?
Everything in the city centers around City Hall. All doors, all paths lead there, right? So, and I think it is. We have a very tough media here in Chicago. We've got cutthroat politicians. It's different today. You know, the machine is not what it was. But there is also, I think, a sense of there's incredible competition, right, between different factions. Everyone kind of keeps one another on their toes. But I think also Chicago just demands a good work ethic. I mean, it's very demanding, no matter what the industry, I think, but especially politics, because it's such a people business. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've knocked doors, hundreds of doors. I've gathered hundreds of petitions. Like, you start and you work your way up and you just develop a real respect and you just expect everyone else to operate at that level.
It's fascinating. You got to come back. I just feel like so many things, again, with this inside politics, I have so many questions about how the sausage
gal,
is made.
So.
Becky Carroll, C Strategies. Becky, thanks for being my guest. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Justin.